You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko India tōku ingoa. Nō mai, haere mai, ki te wire, mō tēnei rā. Kia ora, welcome to The Wire for Tuesday, the 1st of August. I'm joined by my producer Lucy Austin in studio. We also have some great interviews from reporter Max Smith for you today. First up on the show, we're speaking to David Slack about Andrew Little stepping down as Labour Party leader. The Education Institute weighs in on the government's decision to scrap the decile system in schools, and we hear from Education Minister Nikki Kaye in response. We speak to Tracy Barnett, who is leading a campaign which sees voters asking politicians whether they'll commit to welcoming 500 more refugees ahead of the election. On the Green Desk, we speak to Francesca Lipscomb from Environmental Choice about the tactics used by companies to market their products as eco-friendly. As always, if you want to let us know your thoughts on any issues we cover, please give us a call, 309 3879, or a text on 5395.
Can anyone explain why the modern day whales are so big?
The Wire.
So this morning, Andrew Little has announced that he'll be stepping down as the leader of the opposition, after recent data showed the party has been polling in the low 20s. Jacinda Ardern has just been voted in unopposed by Labour's caucus as their new leader, and Calvin Davis as their new deputy. Jacinda Ardern is addressing the media as we speak. In studio, we have political commentator David Slack to discuss the news. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, India.
So, Little says this move is him taking responsibility for their poor polls. Could this really be considered a responsible decision so close to the election?
Well, I don't think we're in familiar times anymore, and what you used to think was the right thing to do possibly isn't anymore. You know, this is a kind of a reality TV era, astonishingly fast 24/7 news cycle, which means that something that once upon a time would have seemed far too late can actually be quite enough with 6 or so weeks to go. So you've got that first. The second thing is there is, you know, without doubt, a vast amount of possibility there for Jacinda Ardern to capitalise on young people who didn't vote last time and weren't thinking of voting. And there is a real possibility that she connects with people in a way that Andrew Little couldn't, nor David Shearer, nor Phil Goff, nor David Cunliffe. Pardon me. And that's the weird thing about politics. You can think that a party is absolutely screwed. You thought it about the National Party in the 2001 election. So I'm just checking my numbers. Was it there? It was 2002. It was the one where Bill English took a terrible pasting, and you thought, how the hell do they come back from there? Well, look where they ended up. You know, you do have the further complication of the MMP system and the fact that you have the Greens and New Zealand First all fighting for that vote as well. That does make it harder. But there is no doubt that if you throw something new into play, all kinds of things change. And here's the other really crucial thing to consider. There's something about the way people vote that is a million miles away from making a rational, logical calculation. And this is the thing I have to keep banging into my... I've been a political speechwriter a long time now, and I keep writing speeches where I'm making a careful, reasoned argument for something, and then I remember. No, you don't... That's... You need that underneath. But actually, people have... They work... They respond to emotion. They respond to a sort of a visceral human sense of things. And there's a really crucial thing, and that is people want to vote for what other they think everybody else is going to vote for. You'd think they wouldn't. You'd think that rationally you go in and you decide which am I going to do. But actually, when you think about human behaviour, it makes a kind of sense. Like something as mundane as going to dinner with a group of friends, or actually deciding where you're going to go with that group of friends to dinner, you realise, well, I might want to go to this one place, but people are saying they want to go to this other one. It would actually be better for us all if I go along with this idea. I reckon there's the large human impulse that runs in this that says, well, what's everyone else voting for? I want to make this work. I'm going to vote for them too. So that really stands in the way of people saying, now stuff that. I've had enough of the pineapple pizza bloody Prime Minister and 9 years of this bloody national government just doing squat to make it possible for me to ever afford a house. I'm going to go with these other guys. Well, it becomes harder when you get a sense that most people aren't. However, now we've got this new possible Prime Minister who's young and relates to people, and she's a woman, and that, you know, we're quite good at electing women as Prime Minister. And I think that's got a real potential too. Sorry, it's probably answered about four other questions in mind. But
well, my next question was, is that Jacinda Ardern obviously is coming at a very difficult moment with, you know, Labour doing so poorly in the polls. She's also repeatedly said that she doesn't want the position. Do you think that it's true that she didn't want the position? How do you think she'll do if it is?
Yeah, I know she has said that, and I know she means it, but I also know that she's very capable, and she knows that if she's presented with a different set of circumstances, she can rise to it. She's one of the most capable people I've ever seen in politics. She's really well-informed about issues. She's really skillful at working out how to convey that to people, you know, getting real substance in there, but also making it comprehensible to people. And she's really good at organising people. You know, I've done various events with her where she's chairing the thing, and she is way more effective at making things hum along and get just what you need from people and then move on than many people I've ever seen. Now, that's a really crucial role for both a leader of a party, a leader of a coalition, and a leader of the country, and I reckon she could do it really bloody well.
Mm. Well, I guess you've had a bit of a closer perspective than other people who might say, that she doesn't have enough experience and don't know her on that more sort of personal level. Do you think that this will improve confidence in the party, or does it come across as a bit of a shambles and someone coming in who isn't experienced enough?
Yeah, well, the needle on the shambles meter is running higher than zero, that's for sure. But you know, I think actually what they've done behind the scenes, well, no, not behind the scenes, it's been done, it just hasn't really been noticed, is they've put together a clutch of, you know, very solid policy on education funding, on social welfare, proper, decent social spending, and a huge program for building new houses, which is what we absolutely need. You know, I'd like to see them go further, and I'd like them to see them have a capital gains tax, but at least they're bloody trying. You know, front and centre problem, front and centre issue in this country is that you can't, there's not a remote prospect of affording a house if you live in Auckland or Wellington or Queenstown, or, you know, for a lot of people, and that's got to change. And this government's doing nothing about it. A new coalition government would. That ought to be reason enough. And depend, you know, who's to say where the campaign will go over the next 6 weeks, but I think there's a real hunger in the electorate to hear people say, hey, this is screwed up and we're going to do something about it. And I think Jacinda's very good at conveying that to people. I think it could work. But anything could happen.
So you think, because, I mean, obviously, you know, we're leading our show with the story about the party rather than their policy. Do you think there is enough time to switch that focus back to policy?
Oh, yeah, happening? I mean, it's such a huge frustration that you always see that the last election, it became all about Kim.com, and it was impossible to get anything about policy discussed, and it was so frustrating. I don't know. And there's a further problem too. The National Party love this, and they love to scare people at every opportunity. Oh, if you vote for these other guys, you're going to have this weird 14-legged monster of people who can't get along. What utter bullshit. You know, these are people, I'm guessing a lot of them have watched Borgen and loved it. Well, what did you have there? You had actual coalition government. That's what they have in Sweden, and it works really well. And what's more, it's a different kind of a formulation where you don't have, as we have had so far with coalition arrangements, one big dog and a few tails. You can actually have a decent arrangement of, let's say, a chunk of Labor, a chunk of Greens, and a chunk of New Zealand First, and that could work just fine. But there's a kind of a incapacity to see that MMP can make that possible, and an incapacity to see that the way we used to do things doesn't have to be the way we do it in the future. I'd love to see that change, but you know, to go back to your question, you know, will we shift from parties to policies? I don't know. In a way, if we do stay on parties, I'd like to see us have a much more intelligent debate about the fact that a coalition could work really bloody well.
Mm. Yeah, well, we just have a statement from the Māori Party saying that they are calling on Labour to work with them to form a government if they're in a position to do so after September 23rd. So that's just come out as well. Did you see that?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I love Marama Fox. I think she does great stuff. You have her on here quite often, don't
you?
And she's so good. And I'd love to see them working together rather than having this kind of token arrangement with the National Party. Mm. Of course, I'm not sure how that would work with New Zealand First, but here's the thing to consider. If Jacinda can really push the vote up, it doesn't have to be New Zealand First in the mix.
Mm. Cool, thank you so much for joining us. It's been
pleasure.
Very informative.
Tiny Ruins, the King's Arms, this Saturday. Following collaborations with Hamish Kilgar and David Lynch, Tiny Ruins Holly Fulbrook is bringing her intricate psychedelic folk back home for an intimate gig at the King's Arms.
Always a dream way.
You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll enter a mystical world of alternate guitar tunings. Tiny Ruins, with support from Polyester, this Saturday at the King's Arms. Tickets from undertheradar.co.nz.
Heard this great new tune on Saturday.
Ooh, share.
Hasn't been released yet.
What? Oh my God, you can time travel?
What? No, I...
Maybe just your ears can time travel. Make them listen to next Saturday.
I can hear shouting, whispering,
ooh,
wailing.
Tune into BFM every Saturday from 11 a.m. for Totally Wired. Your host, Jess Fu, leaps forward in the time stream to grab you the week's best new releases, pre-releases and more. Totally Wired, thanks to Auckland Art Gallery. Saturday, 11 till 2 p.m. on 95BFM.
It's time to chat politics with multi-party co-leader Marama Fox.
Good morning, Marama. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. Thank you so much for joining us. So obviously big news this morning. What's your take on Andrew Little stepping down as Labour leader? Do you think it's a good move this close to the election?
Well, you know, it does show that Labour is in complete disarray and they're clutching at solutions. But if this is going on the latest polls, which are obviously the worst in 20 years, and it would have seen Andrew Little not even make it back in, but the indications have not been good for 3 years, so to have left it this late in the run shows that I think it's a little bit desperate. However, I actually think that this is the best tactical move they've made throughout the entire election, and they should have made it earlier. I think bringing in Calvin Davis to the deputy position from out of the Māori seats is absolutely the best move that they could have made. Andrew Little has been very poor in his leadership in regards to Māori issues and the Māori MPs, and this shows that Labour actually respects the Māori vote, where previously I don't think they did, in the way that they handled Nanaia Mahuta, and considering it was her votes who got Andrew Little through as the Labour leader in the first place. And so I do believe that this is the best tactical move they've made. In regards to the election, it will give them the best opportunity because it looked like it was a hiding to nothing before. But I also do think that once the pressure comes on, you'll see the measure of the grit of Calvin Davis and of Jacinda Ardern in these new roles. So, you know, I think that it's early days yet and we're a long way out from the election. I do think that what we would like to see is a smoothing of the pathways because there didn't seem to be any appetite whatsoever to be working with the Māori Party despite our constant calls to the Labour leadership to say that we would be open to working with them in any future government. In fact, there's more akin to what our people, our constituents and our followers would like us to do. We've not had the opportunity to do that in previous elections because Labour have performed so poorly. This election, they could form a government with us if that was what they were willing to do. The indications are that with Davis coming in, that might not be the feeling of the Māori caucus. So we'll just have to wait and see.
So if they were to come to you and say that a coalition would be possible, what other sort of moves would you need to see from them on that?
Well, the fact that they come to us and say that for a start, because they haven't said it to date. We have said it over and over again and have been rejected out of hand. So there is that, but there are still some questions to be asked here. I think they're valid questions. Will Calvin Davis now go back on the list? Will there be a list reshuffle? I've not heard any of the statements, so they may have announced that already, but you would think they would have to. And then if Calvin Davis comes back on the list, will the other Māori MPs come back on the list, and where will that put them? Will Willie Jackson move up the list? I have no idea where things are at. Are they going to take down all the billboards and put up new ones, or just put a sticker on? I mean,
that's a good question.
That's a bit flippant. But, you know, there are a lot of things ahead of them yet, and we're 8 weeks out.
Great. Yeah, I think there's actually been a lot of talk about the billboards, just considering that there are, you know, a lot of big things going on. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Marama.
No problem at all. I think I was never going to throw stones at Andrew Little in the position that he's in there, but for the grace of God, go I as the leader of the party. So I think, if it were me, I would have liked to have seen him tough it out. Because that shows a grit and a determination and a fighting spirit. But I think that this is some indication of still some disarray within the party, but I actually think that this was the right move to make.
All right, thank you so much.
Right,
we'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye.
That was Marama Fox for the Māori Party.
The Wire.
Kids upon a cure. I don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
So the new Labour Party leader, Jacinda Ardern, has just addressed the media after being voted in unopposed as the new leader of the opposition. She says at the moment she's not talking about other parties for now or a list reshuffle. She's taking 72 hours to take stock of Labour's campaign before any new policy calls are made. Next up, the New Zealand Educational Institute says the government's decision to replace the decile system with targeted funding is only shifting the deck chairs on the Titanic. Education Minister Nikki Kaye made the announcement yesterday, which will push funding towards at-risk children, beginning in 2019 or 2020. Reporter Max Smith spoke to NCEI President Linda Stewart, who says unless schools receive a huge funding boost, the removal of the decile system won't fix the problems facing the education sector.
We've been crying out for a funding jolt into education for some time now, and I think that's well understood. We asked for $1 billion injection into education before the budget, and we're disappointed when that didn't happen. We recognise that there were some areas that we did see a little bit of funding go into, but actually it's nowhere near enough. And so what we're talking about with the replacement of the decile system is really, really important. NZEI is not wedded to the decile system at all. We know that it has stigmatised some schools and it has overinflated the reputation of others. And that's not okay. We've got low decile schools across this country who are doing a brilliant job for the children in their schools. And I think that the public perception around the decile system actually needs to be questioned. So, yes, you know, happy if the decile system goes, but we need to ensure that what it is replaced with actually doesn't stigmatise in the same sort of way. And at the moment, the Minister has announced the move to risk indicators to be used to target funding to schools. And the word risk itself creates a negative connotation. So I think there's a lot of work to be done in ensuring that this is a positive move forward. I believe it can be. But it's actually about the work with the sector to ensure that this is done right. And it's also work that needs to happen with the public around the perceptions around our schools.
What is your concern with the word at risk? Because, I mean, I think the government is saying that they want most of the funding to go to the, you know, generally the poorer schools, the schools with kids that are in need right now, most of the funding that is available. Isn't that what they're trying to achieve?
I think they're trying to achieve, and time will tell around this. We just need to bear in mind that the decile funding for schools is only 3% of the total operational funding for schools. And so when we look at it from that perspective, then actually we need to also be looking at what funding is going in to support curriculum, staffing, resourcing, learning support, and all of the other aspects that make up what actually makes the difference for children and how we can really meet their needs. When you start to talk about targeting for risk, you actually start to fall into, and I note that just before you said the poorer schools, it's around the framing of this and what it really means. Is it really about meeting, ensuring that we make sure that every child's needs are met, or is it going to do exactly the same thing? And those are questions that we raised yesterday with the Minister and we will continue to raise as we move forward in trying to work with the Ministry in finding the right way to do this.
And you're concerned that they haven't outlined exactly how they're going to implement this plan as well?
Well, yes. I mean, it's light on detail at the moment. What we've got is a commitment from the Minister to work with us, which is very important. We've also got a commitment from the Minister that no school will lose out, and that many schools will gain extra funding. Now, what we'll be interested in is that may be the case for 2020 or for 2021 and possibly 2019, but will that erode over time? Those are the sorts of questions that we're going to be asking, and we're going to be relentless around that as we move forward, because what we want from this is the very, very best for our children. And we've stated that we're underfunded anyway, so we absolutely want to make sure that this is a positive way forward, not actually going to be something that in 27 years' time we look back on and say, as we've done with DESOL, we look back on and say, actually, that just stigmatised schools yet again.
That was NZEI President Linda Stewart talking about the government's decision to scrap the decile system in schools. This morning, MAC also spoke with Education Minister Nikki Kaye about NZEI's concerns.
Since we've been in government, we've increased vote education by about $500 million every year that we've been in office, from $8 billion to $11.6 billion. The second thing I'd say is that we have confirmed as part of this announcement that there will be more funding, so no school will lose. In fact, there'll be a number of schools that will significantly increase.
Right, and do we know how much funding this is going to be?
Well, because we are very focused on ensuring that we are collaborative around this policy and that we consult with the sector, we haven't landed on the final risk factors, which means that we can't determine exactly how much it will cost, but it will be in the millions.
And you expect this to be enough to ensure that not only do no schools lose any funding, but also these at-risk schools are going to get a boost?
That's correct. Obviously, we've got to land on the final factors, but what we have said is there will be a number of schools that will do significantly better in terms of funding. I think it's important to note that this isn't the only way that we help some of our most vulnerable children. We also have other investments. For instance, in Budget 2017, we announced an additional $34 million for those children with severe behavioural difficulties. We also announced more money for those children that have oral language and communication skills issues. So this is on top of other funding that we invest in our most vulnerable.
Okay, how do you measure at-risk children in this context?
Well, again, it's not so much at risk, it's at risk of not achieving. So again, we're working through what the final system could look like, but we've announced some draft factors that are based around research that we have in terms of what is the likelihood of a child being at risk of not achieving. This is much more sophisticated than just taking neighbourhood characteristics like the decile system. But the other thing I just want to make the point about is a big part of this announcement as well is getting away from labelling schools in a discriminatory way, which is what the decile system has done in the past.
And, I mean, obviously you need other funding measures, because the decile system only represented 3% of the funding that schools receive. So do you think the changes to this and the targeting towards at-risk children is really going to address the problem, when it already represents such a small part of the funding to the education system?
Well, look, as I said before, the government has a much wider strategy around vulnerable children, everything from the new agency, the Ministry for Vulnerable Children, to investments in behavioural services, to the 300,000 houses that we've insulated, to being the first government in office to raise core benefits, to investments in oral language and communication. We've got a pretty wide-reaching plan to support some of our most vulnerable, of which this is just one part.
So you wouldn't say that there's any plans for what people are calling for, which is a huge boost in overall funding to the education system?
Well, again, you know, we're in an election campaign, so parties will be announcing their policies throughout this period. But what I can say is on past history, we've gone from $8 billion to $11.6 billion. So we've got a good track record of significantly increasing voter education.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
So my producer Lucy Austin has been listening in to Jacinda Ardern's first address to the media as the new Labour Party leader. What updates has she shared so far?
So she really opened with a really positive statement, standing very strong, stressing unity of the Labour Party can do better and will do better. Both her and Kelvin were unanimously accepted by the Labour caucus with no competition. But what was really good about it was there was a real focus on the future generations. She was really looking forward, and their stamp is more positivity, a new vision of a better and fairer New Zealand. Yeah.
And you said that she had quite a strong response to a question about whether she was ready for the job.
Yeah, she was ready for those questions, which I think were... that obviously those questions were going to come up. She stressed how she's had 20 years experience and and threw the question back at them and asked them why they thought that she wasn't ready, to which they had no response.
Mm. And Calvin Davis has come out and said something about a coalition with the Māori Party and what he expects if that was going to go ahead.
Yeah, so there was a couple of questions being thrown at them both about coalitions and talking about New Zealand First and the Greens, and the response in every single one was that they're focusing on the Labour campaign. They don't want to talk about any other parties, it's focused on Labour. But Calvin did say that the Māori Party, if they want to form a coalition, have to step up their game if they want to work with them.
Cool, thank you so much for the update.
It's all good.
Hello? Hello? If you can hear me, I'm sending this message from the year 2038 to tell you one thing. Lily was right.
Want a better future for the planet? Then listen up. This is the Green Desk with Lily Peacock, thanks to the Manukau Beautification Charitable Trust.
This morning I spoke with Francesca Lipscomb, the General Manager for Environmental Choice. Environmental Choice is the official environmental label for the Ministry for the Environment. I spoke with her to find out what this really means for you as the consumer. So what standards do the products that have your stamp have to adhere to?
We develop criteria that's based on best practice or best environmental practice across the whole life cycle of a product category. We develop criteria that addresses all the environmental concerns from raw material sourcing through the manufacturing process and even into end of life. And all the products that carry our label have met all of our requirements.
And what are those requirements more specifically?
They vary depending on the product category, because all products are different and all supply chains are different, I guess. But we always look at raw material sourcing, so in paper products, that ensuring that the pulp comes from sustainable forests. In cleaning products, that's looking at hazardous substances and where they're coming from. So yeah, look, it varies greatly. In every specification, that's what we call our criteria document. In every specification, we have a requirement for energy management reporting and waste management reporting. And there's also a need for organisations as a whole to adhere to any local environmental regulations there may be. And then every specification also looks at an end-of-life solution for that product.
So how does this stamp differ from others, such as you often see Enviromark in the supermarket?
Yes, yeah, Enviromark is a very credible label, but it's an environmental management system. So that label applies to an organisation as a whole and I guess is a third-party accreditation of their management system that they have as an organisation. Our label is very much product-based, so we look at specific product and the ingredients and the manufacturing process that's involved with producing that product.
So when a consumer goes into a supermarket or shops online, there are so many products that claim to be environmental. is there anything stopping a company from calling themselves eco-friendly, being called something eco-something, or claiming to be green?
No, there's not, unfortunately. There are obviously rules around organisations or products making false claims, but what we're seeing mostly with greenwashing in New Zealand particularly is that organisations are sort of pulling the wool over consumers' eyes by implying that the product has green credentials when in fact it doesn't. And that could be by using a name like eco or environmental, or it could be as innocuous as a picture of a dolphin on the front of the label that sort of implies the sustainable attributes that the product may or may not have.
So the legislation isn't very strict on what you can and can't put on a packet?
No, as long as you're not making a blatant, lie, then no. No, I mean, a product could claim to be all natural, and it could well be all natural, but of course that doesn't necessarily mean that it's good for us and good for the environment. An example of that is that arsenic is a natural ingredient, and of course that's highly undesirable.
Yeah. So how far along the line of a product does your stamp go? Does it look at disposal?
It does, yes. Yes, all our criteria documents include a requirement for end-of-life product stewardship. And all our criteria documents are also based on the New Zealand market. There needs to be an end-of-life solution here in New Zealand.
And finally, why is it so important to be buying environmentally sustainable products?
Well, I think that consumers are, they want to do the right thing. I think more and more we are asking organisations to be more sustainable. And buying sustainable or environmentally preferable products is a really practical way that your average New Zealand consumer can do their bit. So I think that, it's getting more and more prevalent, and people want to do the right thing, just like we want to recycle and be responsible New Zealand citizens. So yes, I think that unfortunately greenwashing sort of clouds this issue and makes it more difficult for consumers to make those informed purchase decisions that we really want to be able to do.
That was the Green Desk, thanks to the Monaco Beautification Charitable Trust.
Want to help save people's lives, but can't be bothered getting your hands dirty? Good news! The New Zealand Blood Service is setting up a blood drive, and all you need to do is join them for a pint. Your shout, of course. Of your blood, of course.
July 31st to August 4th, 10 till 4. Head above the quad in the Student Union building to give blood and do your part. Tide's a bit low Wednesday to Friday. Try for then, eh?
So don't be bashful. Book with the app, newzealandblood.co.nz, or call 0800 448 325 to book an appointment today.
Hi, I'm looking for a lunch bell.
Yes, this is the bell department, but please don't ring any.
Why not? Oh, gross, you're drooling everywhere.
Please, it's the bells, every time I hear one. Sorry, I was raised by Pavlovian physiologists.
This'll get the glands going. Listen out for the lunch bell every weekday on Morning Glory for a free fries giveaway from Lord of the Fries, your favourite ethical fast food joint. Hear the lunch bell? Salivate, then text Lord of the Fries to 5395 for your chance to win with Lord of the Fries and 95BFM.
As the change sets in, we are separate. As the game begins, we are separate. Some strings slackening, others giving in. Change sets in. Cycles of three triangles are tricky. Cycles of three triangles are tricky. Cycles of three triangles are tricky. As the change sets in, we are one again. As the game begins, we are one again. This is the natural order of things. Change sets in. Move moonshine, moonshine, moonshine. Freeze, moonshine, moonshine, moonshine. Freeze, moonshine, moonshine, moonshine. Freeze, moonshine, moonshine, moonshine. Freeze. As the change sets in, we have lost our way. As the game begins, we are found again. As the change sets in, cycles of three, moonshine, 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 free. 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 As the change sets in, we are one again. As the game begins, we are one again. This is the natural order of things. Change sets in.
That's funny. What does it sound like?
Writer and campaigner Tracy Barnett is at the helm of a new initiative called Welcome 500 Now, which sees voters ask politicians whether they will commit to the immediate step of taking 500 more refugees if they're elected into office. I spoke to Tracy about the campaign and what she hopes it will achieve before the election.
I think that in this election there is so much bluster and so much hot air that it would be a breath of fresh air if we could actually accomplish something specific and something tangible. And there have been some great calls to increase, double, triple, and more our refugee quota, but that quota is only reviewed on a 3-year cycle, and we still have a couple of more years to go. This initiative is about getting our politicians, asking our MPs, to say publicly out loud that they would welcome 500 more refugees now if they were reelected. And we're asking people to do it in a couple of different ways. One is to take a whiteboard marker and write hashtag 500 now on the palm of your hand, hold it out, take a picture with you or some friends, and send it to our prime minister, send it to the heads of political parties, send it to your own PM via email with a line or two on why you support this, and ask them outright, yes or no, would you support this publicly?
Four former prime ministers have all said that they agree with the campaign. Can you tell me a little bit about who's come on board and why they support the campaign?
I think this has been both humbling and powerful to see that four of our most respected statesmen, former prime ministers who have gone on to be have international careers that we're highly respected too in the World Trade Organization, at the UN, as U.S. ambassadors, as university chancellors. These folks came on board because I think they felt that this was simply the right thing to do. And I think there is a bit of time and distance that gives some honesty and some clarity from the office to say, this is what New Zealand should be doing. So who's on board is Helen Clark. She was the former number three position at the UN, Sir Geoffrey Palmer, who is an esteemed legal scholar, Mike Moore, who was the former Director General of the World Trade Organization and U.S. Ambassador, and also U.S. Ambassador, former U.S. Ambassador Jim Bolger, and now University Chancellor at Waikato University. Those are the four that have come on board, and it's been an incredibly positive experience to really see that their words are saying, this should be our conscience, this is the right thing to do.
Because I read that you were quite surprised that there wasn't much hesitation for them to come on board.
There wasn't, and that's really a tribute to all of them. They simply said, this is a humanitarian imperative. This may or may not have to do with politics, but this needs to rise above the political moment. And I think that's what they were really talking about. And I think all of them have experienced careers that were out in the international stage as well. And I think part of that is them recognizing that New Zealand does need to do more, as we rank 95th worst in the world per capita for the total number of refugees that we take. That's simply not good enough.
At the moment, what's usually cited as by politicians as being the main barriers as to why they won't allow more refugees?
Well, Bill English has often said that we need to take better care of the refugees who are already here. And it's a fair comment, and indeed we do, no differently than we need to take better care of any Kiwi that's here, for whether they're born here or not. But the truth is that if you make that instead of, you're actually demeaning and debilitating the entire reason of having a humanitarian intake of refugees to begin with. That is the purpose here, saving lives that are in an emergency state, saving lives that have no state to look after them, and hopefully allowing them to recreate and rebuild new lives as new Kiwis here. And I think one of the things that's important to remember is that these new Kiwis enrich us as well. And that's very important. There have been studies out of Europe that show that for every €1 spent welcoming refugees, in 5 years' time, the host country will reap €2 in reward. It means that it takes a little while for everybody to get on their feet. But when they do, these folks become, for example, our prime ministers. John Key was the child of a refugee. Nikki Hauger was the child of a refugee. Even the gentleman who brought us Vogel's bread was a refugee himself. So this isn't just an economic issue. This is really a humanitarian issue that shows that refugees enrich the fabric of Kiwi life in a myriad of ways.
Some campaigners, including Amnesty International, criticised last year's increase as shameful and sort of doing the bare minimum. What was your response to that increase in December?
I thought that move of just 250 was one of the most cynical political moves I'd seen in a long time. We'd seen every single newspaper, multiples of church groups and NGOs and politicians endorse increasing the quota. And when push came to shove, the government's choice was to increase the quota because they really felt the pull behind the need to do something more. But they did it at the lowest possible number they possibly could get away with without having done nothing. And it's been almost 30 years since that quota was touched. And to give National its credit, they did something, but that something is simply not enough. And that's really what this campaign is about, to do something tangible in these next 3 months to really have an impact on our MPs making the commitment now instead of several years from now.
So you published The Quiet War on Asylum a few years ago. Could you explain, firstly, a little bit about the issues that are addressed in that book in terms of policy?
When I wrote The Quiet War on Asylum, it was a quiet war. But in the years that have since transpired, that war has been anything but quiet. In fact, it's been downright overt and particularly ugly. And I think Australian policy, unfortunately, in its how it's treated its boat arrivals by imprisoning them in modern-day gulags and offshore detention prisons, is a reflection of that. Australia, ironically, though they have these terrible offshore prison detention policies, they still take four times more per capita than New Zealand does for hosting refugees. So we all have our deficits, but ours happens to be inaction and silence. and we have remained absolutely and resolutely silent against Australia for the abuses it's incurred on these poor and fragile people.
In the lead up to the election, what would you consider a success for 500 Now to be? What would you like politicians to come out and say in response to this?
I hope that anybody who's listening to this broadcast will actually take a minute, and when they try to analyze how they actually want to make a small gesture for political change, they take 2 minutes out of their day to do this, to sit down with a whiteboard marker, write hashtag 500 Now in the palm of their hand, hold it up to a camera, and send that email to our Prime Minister, to Michael Woodhouse, our Immigration Minister, to the party leaders, and to your MP. It can have one sentence or two. Will you commit, yes or no, to taking 500 more refugees now, if elected, and then hold their feet to the fire after, on September 24th, the day afterwards? A successful campaign for me would be every politician of every party, come out and say, this is at least the smallest thing we can do. This is a start for now. We'll do more as we go, but let's accomplish something tangible on September 24th.
That was The Wire.
That's the end of the show for another week. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us on the show today. David Slack, Linda Stewart, Francisca Lipscomb, Nikki Kay, and Tracy Barnett. And also Marama Fox, who joined us a bit last minute. A big thanks to my producer Lucy Austin and reporter Max Smith. And thanks for being with us. We'll be back next week. Jenna's up next with the 1 to 4.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.